It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important story.
Out here in Colorado, we had a sex education bill that was passed. It was signed by the governor and put into law. I just can't believe what is happening to public education.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
We are now using policy that if you don't affirm something, that they use policy then to take away your businesses.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Kids are just being bombarded with darkness.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
You know, we need to get back to letting our kids be kids.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
Indeed, it is hump day. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and let's have some conversations. Be sure and check out our website. It is Kim Munson, that's MONSON.com. Podcasts of the shows are there. What you can do is we have these beautiful show recaps for each day. You can just click on that. It'll bring up descriptions, the podcast, and so be sure and check that out. The show is rebroadcast every evening from 10 to 11 p.m. on KLZ 560 as well. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Important show today. We'll go through some headlines in this first segment. We'll be talking with John Kellner, who is a candidate for district attorney for Arapahoe, Douglas, Elbert, and Lincoln counties. These races, my friends, are so important. And so we'll be talking about community safety with John Kellner. And then the third and fourth segment, Dr. Brian Dimitrovic, you know him. He is an economic historian and the Richard S. Strong Scholar at the Laffer Institute and the author of Econoclast, The Rebels Who Sparked the Supply-Side Revolution and Restored American Prosperity, and JFK and the Reagan Revolution, A Secret History of American Prosperity. We'll talk with him about the current economic outlook, as well as a piece he recently had in Forbes about great businesses start in booms, too. So I love the fact that he's going to tell us, I think, that we can get back to American prosperity, Producer Steve.
That's awful. Excuse me. That's awesome, because I need some good news. I keep complaining to you that I've hit the saturation point, and mostly that's because the news is less than stellar. So let's bring it on.
Okay. I think, he doesn't really pull any bones about things, but, we've been in difficult situations before. And so we need to carry on and persevere. So it'll be a good conversation with Dr. Brian Dimitrovic in segments 3 and 4. As we look at these issues, put on your thinking caps. Critical thinking, a lot of critical thinking has gone out the door. You can see that in America right now. And so going back to what Rudyard Kipling has said, he said, "I keep 6 honest serving men. They taught me all I knew. Their names are what and why and when and how and where and who." And love this other quote, "Fear knocked on the door, truth answered, and there was no one there." So continuing on, we look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. We have seen, though, that those that are pushing for socialism are using fear to really use force then as well. Yesterday we talked about the picture of Cherry Creek Reservoir Beach, where one picture, people everywhere. The other picture, the police had cleared the beach off. And as Patty had mentioned in our recap, that the temperature was above 77 degrees that day, which is the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is not supposed to be able to survive in those temperatures. And, you know, the other thing that we mentioned, Steve, it's so interesting that television station happened to be, that must have been in a boat, to take the before and after picture. So going back to Rudyard Kipling, it's like, how did they know that? So let's put our thinking caps on. There seems to be some communication here that isn't really freedom orientated, Steve.
Absolutely. If you haven't seen that picture, we'll just describe it. It was obviously taken from a boat, because you're out probably 100 feet or more looking back at the beach. The first picture, the beach is crowded with people. The second picture relatively looks to be close to the same time of day. There's nobody to be found. So you tell me.
Yeah. And so there seems to be some collusion going on there, Steve. That seems to be the case. So Continuing on here, though, I always like to say thank you to this team that I get to work with you, Producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Charlie, Keith, and the Crawford team. And then to each of you listeners, you're treasured, you're valued. You've got a purpose today. Go out and, you know, this is the day before you. You got to make the best of it. And a couple of very important things, and that is these due date too late petitions are due. And Steve, I actually checked to see if my signature had been accepted, and it had not. I continue to hear more and more stories of people that signed those petitions, and it said that there was a question with the notary. And I know that that's not factual either. And so there's shenanigans going on with this particular initiative. And I don't know if you saw this, but Governor Polis has come out and done an executive order regarding future petition signings that, in fact, they can be done via email or mail-in. You talk about fraud. So they kicked my signature out because they said it wasn't notarized. But yet this new edict that he's putting out will not be used for due date too late. They're making it as difficult as possible to get this on the ballot. And what due date too late is many of you may not realize that in Colorado, we have one of the most aggressive abortion policies in the country, where babies can be aborted right up to the moment of birth. And so this particular initiative, Juliana Day has worked very diligently to get this on the ballot, is that after 22 weeks that there will no longer be abortions, except I think in the case of the mother's, you know, life. Otherwise, that is the cutoff date. And that seems like the humane thing to do, Steve, because after 22 weeks, studies show that the babies really can feel pain. So I think it's really important that we get this on the ballot. And it's amazing. These radical activist Dems do not want this on the ballot. And the fact that my signature was kicked out, if you'd like to find out whether or not your signature was accepted, you can actually text. Let me get to this. I've got the information here. I put it here. You can text Juliana Day at 720-899-0897. Again, text her at 720-899-0897. And so I will need to sign this again because they kicked my signature out. Steve, it's absolutely amazing.
Well, we are awash in wrongdoing, politically speaking, across the entire country. There is so much wrongdoing going on at every level, and nobody pays a price for it. It's so disheartening, and you wonder why press on. And, you know, back to the governor, the briefing that we get from Patty every day, the word executive order must be in there at least a half dozen times. And it's like everyone's calling him, slandering him, and calling him King Polis, but he almost invites it. With this, all these executive orders and his edicts, his mandates that have nothing to do with legislation. It's, I don't know, it's tough to stay positive.
Well, the positive thing is, Steve, is that the veil is off. And the things that they typically have accused others of doing, where, I mean, there were times that they would accuse a Republican of something. I'm thinking of Trump. Everything they accuse Trump of. Remember when they tried to make it look like he was the king during the Kavanaugh hearings, where they said, oh, he thinks he's a king. He named his son Barron. But yet when it comes right down to it, Donald Trump is honoring federalism, which federalism is that we have states' rights and states get to make their decisions. And so when Trump said, oh, I have the power to open up the whole country, the radical activists on the left said, oh, my gosh, he's acting like king. I can't believe that. He doesn't have the power. And then it was like, I'm just kidding. It's actually the state's responsibility. And now the veil is off on these governors. And it's kind of ironic that Polis is getting play in the media that he is one of the few Democrat governors that are opening up the state. But all you have to do is take a look at that pictures between the Cherry Creek Reservoir of the beach filled with people and then the beach filled without people. And that doesn't look to me like it's opening up, Steve.
No, and you mentioned our governor. I'm keeping a little bit of a tally in my head of other blue state governors who are in trouble one way or the other. The amount of negativity or the outright malfeasance, I guess, is the best way to what's going on in New York State. Pennsylvania is right behind him. Michigan, everyone knows what's going down in Michigan in terms of the atrocious behavior of the governor. And I was like, why is all this negative stuff happening in these blue states?
Well, you know, all this has been percolating underneath, Steve. And so what has happened is the veil is now off. We know what we are now fighting against. People that would say that they actually are, looking to coexist. You realize they are not interested in coexisting. They're only interested in making sure that you coexist with their ideas. I mean, take a look at the Michigan governor. And so very quickly, I wanted to mention a couple of things. Lawsuits, this is from Complete Colorado. Lawsuits and criticism of Polis's petitioning order is piling up fast. And Complete Colorado broke the news that Jared Polis has this executive order that is relaxing election laws for petitioning onto the November 2020 ballot. And there's been two suits that have been filed on that. And we know that there is going to be a progressive income tax question on the ballot. So you can see that Polis is relaxing the petitioning process so that probably he can get that on the ballot, but yet they are using an ironclad hand on the signatures for this due date too late. So that's important to realize. One other thing. Oh, go ahead.
Let's not think that that's unusual in terms of the governor. Thinking of the documentary Rocky Mountain Heist in the early 2000s, how many things were they in there manipulating behind the scenes in terms of changing rules, changing this, changing that, with a specific agenda in mind? So this is nothing new.
No, it is nothing new, but we are watching, and we need to hold them accountable. And I want to get to our quote, though. We had Ben Martin on yesterday, and we were talking about the period of time coming up to the American Revolution. And he was talking about Samuel Adams. So I thought, let's do a Samuel Adams quote today. And Samuel Adams was an American statesman, a political philosopher, and one of the founding fathers of the United States. He was a politician in colonial Massachusetts, a leader of the movement that became the American Revolution, and one of the architects of the principles of American republicanism that shaped the political culture of the United States. He was a second cousin to his fellow founding father, President John Adams. He was born in 1722. He died in 1803 at the age of 81. He said this. He said, among the natural rights of the colonists are these: first, a right to life; secondly, to liberty; thirdly, to property, together with the right to support and defend them in the best manner they can. Pretty awesome, Steve. And I bet he is.
I was getting John on board.
John on the phone. Yep.
But you can't do the quote without doing the funny.
Okay, here we go. How do you know that the Boulder Denver Democrats running Colorado are diverse people?
How do you know?
Because they keep count on how many people they know in each racial or ethnic category.
Okay.
Okay. Before we go to break, it has really been a tough time on our restaurants with all of these executive order edicts, if you will. And then, of course, these things coming down from these public health departments as well. And Hooters Restaurants is a great partner of mine for both of my shows. And they have 5 Hooters Colorado locations. They're accepting to-go orders. You can place those at order.hooters.com. They have curbside service. Steve, I know that you've used that. You just drive up and pick it up. Today, Wednesday, is Wings Day. Buy 20 wings and you get 10 for free. So be sure and check that out. Go to order.hooters.com and bring dinner home tonight. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with District Attorney candidate John Kellner. Stay tuned.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
A recent study finds that COVID-19 economic disruption could force half of small businesses to close within 6 months. Local small business owner Jen Hewlin, Waters Edge Winery, who pledged her home for the loan to start her business, chose to fully open her business last week. As a reasonable individual, she had agreed to a pause in her business until we could better understand COVID-19. The curve has been flattened. There are enough respirators. Effective treatments are available. But the bureaucrats at Tri-County Health said no and shut her down. Jen is fighting for her economic life. Help her with legal costs and operating expenses. Go to KimMunson.com for the link to help Jen through her crowdfunding campaign.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, KimMunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. All of our podcasts of our shows are there, and you can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. Keeping our communities safe is so, so important. And these district attorney races that we have here in Colorado are so important. George Soros has been playing in DA races across the country and putting money into them. And one has to ask why, because George Soros doesn't seem to really have a real love of our constitutional republic. And so we realize that it is so important who we elect to these offices. John Kellner is running for district attorney for the 18th Judicial District, which is for Arapahoe, Douglas, Elbert, and Lincoln counties. John Kellner, welcome to the show.
Hey, Kim. Thanks for having me on again.
You bet. Now, you sent over this newsletter that you are doing, and I really appreciate that. And we're starting to see some increases through this COVID-19 Wuhan virus reaction disruption, which are kind of stopped me in my tracks. Tell us about that.
Well, sure. I mean, everybody talks about, and I think rightfully so, the death toll that coronavirus is having. And of course, everybody's concerned about finding a vaccine or a solution to these problems, but even the economic problems. Everything like that is right in the front and center of our minds. But I don't want people to forget that there is a huge public safety component that's starting to hit us now, and it's going to increase, I think, throughout the summer and the fall and potentially get worse if we have another resurgence of the virus. But what I'm talking about here are some of the policies that our governments are instituting because of coronavirus to sort of lessen things like the prison population. So just recently, we heard about a man who's alleged to have committed a murder. He was released early from the Department of Corrections based off of Governor Polis's executive order to reduce the prison population. And they were reducing it because of concerns about COVID-19 spreading in that prison system. This person is alleged to have gotten out of prison and shortly thereafter killed a young woman in Denver, a 21-year-old woman. So when we hear politicians talking about things like, well, we're balancing public safety with trying to do our duty with respect to these prisoners, my question is, how much is public safety really playing into that? How much of it is it part of the equation?
Well, and you hear this narrative that we want to keep people safe. And it's kind of interesting to me that now a greeting or when you say goodbye to people, they say, stay safe. Well, Safety certainly is really important for us to be able to thrive and flourish. But the safety of our communities means that people that would hurt others and that have been put into jail or prison would stay there until, their allotted time was up. And so in this case, and this was from the Denver Channel, Patty had pulled this headline, says the cousin of the murdered woman says the inmate's early release is the blame for her death. Now, I wonder if they're going to call that a COVID-19 death or not. A little tongue-in-cheek on that. But to your point is when we are starting to do this, there are all kinds of other circumstances that occur when we're making poor decisions in the criminal justice arena here in our communities.
Yeah, and, you know, there's so many, I wouldn't say necessarily unintended impacts of things like the stay-at-home order, but you know, maybe things that people didn't foresee coming, like having that stay-at-home order go into such force and effect. What we're hearing about across the country are things like spikes in calls to domestic violence hotlines, but yet reduced reporting to police departments about things like domestic violence and child abuse. And it kind of makes sense if you think about it, because now those people who are most at risk of being victims of abuse are less likely to be in contact with people who are mandatory reporters, people who have to call the police and report something suspicious. And it really has the possibility of isolating some of the most vulnerable people in our population that are most likely to be victims of crime and sort of sweeping it under the rug. We're not hearing about it. We're not seeing it, not coming into court. But I know it's going to happen when things start to reopen more and more.
Okay, John Kellner, we've got probably about 4 minutes. And why are these races so important? I mean, people say, well, we're a nation of laws. But yet we've seen that many of these Soros-backed DAs kind of pick and choose which laws they prosecute. I guess that's the word. Tell me a little bit about that. Am I hearing that correctly?
You are, and there's this movement out there called a progressive prosecutor movement, and it's this idea that backed by Soros' PAC and a lot of money that comes into these races saying, well, look, if we can't change the laws, let's just change the person who's deciding whether or not they're going to execute faithfully those laws, the person that's going to charge those crimes and have their deputies go into court and hold people accountable under the laws that are properly passed in our state. And this has happened around the country. You see it in places like Philadelphia, places like San Francisco. Frankly, there was money poured into the Jefferson County race for Pete Weir in 2016. He fortunately came out on top in that race. But the idea behind this is that, well, look, if we don't like this law that we think maybe isn't fair, or we don't think that we should criminalize the possession or use of drugs, well, we're just going to find somebody who's not going to enforce that law. I think that runs entirely contrary to our entire premise as a country, that we are a country of laws, that the rule of law is what separates us from so many other countries, that makes us a great place to start a business, raise a family, have your kids go to school. So that's why I'm running. I firmly believe in upholding the rule of law.
Well, and I have one other question, and that is over on the lawmaking side. You know, I served on city council in my community, and somebody said, you know, my job was to do what the people of my community wanted. And I said, true, except it needs to fall within the realm of the Constitution of the United States and the vision of the Declaration. And so I guess it's a tough question. What would your comment be to that, John Kellner?
Well, absolutely. I mean, if people don't like the laws, they should work hard to elect people to change those laws. And I hear a lot of this, people talking about the constitutionality of things like the, Tri-County health orders, or how is it that these bureaucrats have so much power in our system? And I would simply point them to the laws that we have enacted as a state over the years and say, if you don't like that, then get active in politics, find somebody you support, and try and get them in a position to change those laws or challenge them in court. So to the point of the person that had asked you about that, if you feel like something isn't constitutional, there is a way to challenge it. And that's the great thing about our country. We have a system and a way to do that.
That is so true, John Kellner. So how can people get more information about you?
Well, I'd encourage anybody listening to go to my website. It's johnkellner.com, johnkellner.com. You can find our campaign on Facebook, on Twitter, Instagram, at John Kellner, CEO. We love any sort of support that you can throw our way. Sign up for our newsletter. You'll get things like the campaign brief you had mentioned earlier, Kim. And we're just really happy about the coalition and the support we're building in our community. We'd love to have anybody else interested get on board.
Okay, John Kellner, thank you so much, and we'll have you on again very soon.
Thanks, Kim. Take care.
Okay, have a good day. And Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, top of the morning to you.
Hey, good morning. How are you, Kim?
I am good. And I've got a question for you. One of my favorite stores, Pier 1, I've get candles and table runners and gifts and all kinds. I just love that store. And I was in the one in my community. Well, this was when this whole COVID-19 Wuhan virus thing was starting. And they said, well, today is going to be our last day. We're going to close. And they at that time thought it was because of the disruption of the COVID-19. But I saw yesterday that Pier 1 is closing all of their stores because of COVID-19. And that kind of breaks my heart. What's going on?
Yeah, Pier 1's interesting. I remember the Papasan chair. Remember those? It kind of were a chair had the wicker, and they looked like a little satellite dish sitting there in your house with a big poofy cushion. But the stock has always, gosh, Kim, it seems like they've just always been teetering on the verge of falling apart. I mean, I remember trading the stock many, many years ago. They just never seem to be able to get much traction as far as really showing a lot of growth for the company. Every time they seemed to get a little, it would kind of get knocked back. So I think they were probably teetering a little bit on the edge before this happened and just didn't have the strength or liquidity or resources to withstand or hold out through this shutdown. So it is a neat store. They have a lot of very interesting, eclectic type things, and I thought they were neat stores too. Perhaps some private equity company might, you know, buy them up and take the brand, and at some point we may see them again, at least online. You never know.
Right. You just never know. That's my hope, because I've always liked that store. I guess I'm a little eclectic from time to time as well. So it is important going through this, though, to, you know, make sure you take your temperature on your portfolios. And I'd highly recommend people reach out to you and your colleagues over at Presidential.
Well, it can be a difficult time, and sometimes a steady hand is a good thing to have. You know, we advisors sometimes are part-time psychiatrists as well.
And
you know, if nothing else, just kind of getting an opinion on where you're at, a reminder that this has happened before with the markets for many different reasons. The markets have always recovered. In all likelihood, they probably will again this time around. So, yeah, second set of eyes and, you know, another voice in your head that can help you work through your concerns can sometimes be very, very valuable.
Oh, most definitely. And so our website together is airpresidential.com. That's A-I-R, presidential.com. And phone number is 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. Natalie will be at the switchboard there at around 7:30. So, Jason, it's always great to talk with you. You have a good day.
All right. Sorry about Pier 1, Kim.
Oh, I know it. I'm so sad about that. But there's always opportunity, so we'll see what happens.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, talk to you tomorrow. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Dr. Brian Dimitrovic. He's an economic historian and the Richard S. Strong Scholar at the Laffer Institute. We'll talk about the current economic outlook, and then he had an excellent piece in Forbes as well. Great businesses start in booms, too. So we'll be right back.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, kimmunson.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
Welcome back to The Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. All the podcasts of the shows and the recaps are there. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. On the line with me is Dr. Brian Dmitrovic. He is an economic historian. He's the Richard S. Strong Scholar at the Laffer Institute and the author of Econoclast, The Rebels Who Sparked the Supply-Side Revolution and Restored American Prosperity, and JFK and the Reagan Revolution, A Secret History of American Prosperity. And American prosperity is kind of been kicked around a bit right now, it seems like, with this COVID-19 Wuhan virus reaction disruption. Dr. Brian Dmitrovic, welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's really great to be here, Kim.
So American prosperity is something that you look at a lot. And, you know, we've got high unemployment numbers. This whole disruption has just been wild. What do you think's going on, Dr. Brian Dmitrovic?
Well, just aside from the disease analysis, you know, what we've had is just a massive supply stoppage, which we've never really seen before, and people just not going to work to produce. But it's been illuminating in certain ways. What we now know, which we always knew, is that production comes from work. If we work, then we produce. There's stuff. And if we don't work, there's not stuff. You say, well, why? That's so obvious. Well, hold it. We say that we can pay people to do, you know, get checks or welfare or stimulus or government spending, and we'll be just as prosperous as before. That's what, or even more so, that's what Keynesianism has said since the 1930s. Now we know for certain, but we always knew that that's not true. You have to go to real work and a real economy, and that's how our economy becomes affluent and prosperous.
Well, I think that producer Steve is really has his blood pressure going. He was looking at this piece from The Hill about the Heroes Act. And, I mean, it seems like the veil is off on the radical activist dim agenda. What's your comments about the Heroes Act?
Yeah, I'm actually optimistic about a couple political economic developments that have come with this crisis. I think we've seen the kind of hard left democratic push get really blunted and dissipated by this crisis. Not only the candidacy of Joe Biden, which has just gone underground, I mean, nobody even knows where it is, but all that left-wing stuff with AOC and Congress, et cetera, all of a sudden suddenly appeared like a crazy rich person luxury, which is what it always was with this crisis. And that hasn't had any real traction. The only thing the left has been able to accomplish politically, economically, and through policy is authoritarianism, through the kind of left-wing governors being overbearing. And so there's been a lot of clarification, actually, in this kind of strange crisis.
Well, and it, I think it is so interesting that, in fact, it's Donald Trump who's really stood up for federalism. And, of course, it's always been interesting to me that the word federalism actually means states' rights, and statist means an authoritarian government. But, you know, when Donald Trump said, hey, I can open up the economy, you had people on the far left going, oh my gosh, he's an authoritarian, a totalitarian. And then he stepped back and he said, actually, no, we'll leave it up to the states. I thought that was a bit of a brilliant move, Brian Dmytrovich.
I agree. Again, from a position of political strategy, it's a brilliant move. I think constitutionally, it's a very good move as well. I would even question, however, not that the president has the authority to do anything in the states, I would question even whether the state governors have the authority to do the kind of lockdowns. I mean, the president could make that point, even though the president doesn't have authority to overrule the states when they mistakenly order a lockdown. But he has left a lot of governors and petty autocrats out in the wind to dry, people like the governor of Michigan, the governor of Pennsylvania and California, among others. And they're not getting popular, and the political party and the left-wing faction that they represent are really declining in popularity because of their heavy-handedness.
Well, and we're seeing a lot of these blue state Democrat governors. These blue states are in difficult situations financially, and we see them going to Donald Trump. Our governor out here in Colorado got on the plane and went back to Washington, D.C. to ask for money. And I hope that President Trump doesn't bail out these states that have been making very bad choices about their finances. And what do you think is going to happen, Brian?
Yeah, let's be clear about that, that there's a kind of what they call moral hazard with respect to state finances. So a state like Illinois, for example, which is one of the very worst, which has an unfunded liability crisis, you can't even look at it, it's so bad. But the public unions, et cetera, in Illinois want it to be that bad or worse, because otherwise they wouldn't have an inescapable argument to make to people like the federal government. Well, if you don't bail us out, there's going to be mass chaos. And so the more the federal government indulges the possibility, even a remote possibility, that there can be a bailout, there is a remarkable incentive for unscrupulous politicians and unions to produce a massive budget crisis and liability crisis in a state. And that's a moral hazard. By the way, Arthur Laffer and I are right now, should be done next week, writing a paper on the local, state and local property and sales and income tax crisis, particularly property tax crisis of the Great Depression era, the early 1930s. One of the greatest misunderstood and unknown causes of the Great Depression was the high property tax system, which really came on strong in the deflation of the early 1930s.
Okay, so when will this paper be out, and where can people find it?
Yeah, it will be out next week, and we are building a website, which will make its debut in early June. And I can send it to you before then, but it will certainly be available to the public at large all over the world in early June.
Okay, so that's an interesting point to bring up, Brian, and that is taxes. We're hearing rumblings out here in Colorado. Now, we have TABOR, the Colorado Taxpayers Bill of Rights, which basically it says if government politicians, bureaucrats want to raise taxes, they just need to have the good manners to ask us. Now, one of the things that's happened, though, is they just redefine the word. Instead of taxes, they call it a fee, and then they say, we don't have to ask you. So we're going to be in a very interesting time because sales tax revenues are down significantly because the retail sector has been closed down, particularly out here in Colorado. What does that mean for these local governments that are reliant on sales taxes? And I think that we're seeing that there may be this appetite to try to increase taxes on things to make the case to make government function. What would your comment be on that?
Well, if you increase taxes, you're going to have less stuff, and you're certainly going to have less investment and less economic activity. So that is an absolute iron law. So just setting that in a kind of fiscal crisis aside, if tax rates are raised, especially at the state and local level, good grief, there's such tax competition that people do other things with their money. Either investors decide that the rate of return because the real rate of return has gone down with the tax rate is too low, that they'll just park their money in some other safe asset. So there's just a decline in investment on that account. There's a decline in investment on the account of people wanting to contract for work because they had accepted a certain salary. Now if it's going down in real terms because of the tax rate, they're going to do something else. So that is inescapable. So you will have less economic activity. In terms of fiscal solvency, there's one thing that will guarantee fiscal solvency if you have a good budget, and that is economic growth and prosperity. So you have to arrange the tax code such that you get economic growth and prosperity, and that will ensure that good budgeting will produce a balanced budget.
I think one of the positives, we've always talked about limited government in America, and it seems like government was getting bigger, 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 bigger. But one of the positives of this whole disruption may be that government may have to shrink, and I think that could be a real positive, Brian.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, again, we have gotten to see that there's no such thing as just government handing out money, like as universal basic income or something, and there being all sorts of stuff for people to get and maybe do whatever group they want. No, we've seen empty cells, and I mean empty. You know what I'm talking about. At the store, you go to certain places of business that are open, they're like, oh, no, we can't get any supply. We can't get the part for this because they're not manufacturing it right now in Italy or wherever all over the world. Now, this has given the lie to universal basic income, massive stimulus payments, and all the Keynesian fiscal stuff. And we heard, oh, didn't it work in the Great Depression? They put everyone back to work in government jobs. Well, we've got to see it with our own eyes, and there's nothing to get with that money.
Okay, Brian Dmitrovic, let's go to break. When we come back, let's continue the conversation. I know that Larry Kudlow, your colleague, has talked a bit about a payroll deduction or reduction tax or what, not paying the payroll tax, I guess that's it. Let's talk about that when we come back. This is Kim Munson. I'm talking with Dr. Brian Dmitrovic. Stay tuned.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lorne Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lorne Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lorne Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lorne Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
Did you know Hooters wings can fly? That's right. Your favorite wings can be picked up for to-go and can even be delivered right to your doorstep. Take advantage of Hooters' delicious lunch specials, like our seaworthy Baja fish tacos, mouthwatering Western burger, or our new roasted wings. Lunch specials are available to go Monday through Friday from 11:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Curbside service available. Place your order online at order.hooters.com. Get your wings to fly only at Hooters.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson. MONSON.com, and you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. I'm having a conversation with Dr. Brian Dmitrovic. He's an economic historian, the Richard S. Strong Scholar at the Laffer Institute, the author of Econoclast, The Rebels Who Sparked the Supply-Side Revolution and Restored American Prosperity, and he co-authored JFK and the Reagan Revolution, A Secret History of American Prosperity with Larry Kudlow. Dr. Brian Dmitrovic, my question on the table is this pause on the payroll taxes. That seems to be something, you've talked about that before. Are we going to get this done, and what's that going to do for the American economy?
Well, I think it's a good idea. So the payroll tax, of course, is the Social Security tax, 66% on each side. So an employer and employee both pay, each of them pay 6%. So it's a huge tax. So if you say, yeah, they'll work for $20 an hour, then, well, no, it's 6% for each party on top of that. So the wage is, you know, really clear at a higher level, which means there's a lot less employment. And the total amount of money that thing brings in, of course, it funds the Social Security payments that are made to the elderly,
disabled. You know, the amount of money that takes in is less than the stimulus bills by a significant order of magnitude at this point. So if you're going to blow that kind of dough, you might as well do it in a way that really produces employment. And there's no question that if you take that payroll tax down, you're going to have more employment and therefore more production, more wages, more stuff, more profits. No question, because by definition, it'll get bringing more employment. So I think at this point, it's a very good idea.
Okay, so let's think about this. My first thought is, oh my gosh, if we're not paying Social Security taxes and you have all these people that are dependent on Social Security, then what does that mean exactly? And I think I'm deducing that you're saying that actually if you reduce that tax, then you're going to increase employment, increase productivity, which that will create taxes to pay. Well, of course, I guess we're printing money like crazy right now. So if you're going to print money, then you might as well, I guess, print it to handle Social Security right now and over here try to get the economy going. Or am I getting that correctly?
Yeah, it is true from an accounting perspective. So from the perspective of the government's books, that tax receipt of the Social Security tax is dedicated, in theory at least, to one source, which is to pay the Social Security recipients. Now, that's the official answer, but in real life, of course, those tax receipts over the years, over many decades, have gone to fund all sorts of government expenditures. And theoretically, all the other units, departments of the government owe the Social Security Department for all the money that they've borrowed. So we've completely blended all the financing of this system. So to say that, you know, the elderly people aren't going to get their checks because there's no Social Security revenue, well, they're going to get it from somewhere else in the federal budget. If you want to increase employment, this is the tax you cut, as well as the capital gains tax, I should put out.
Okay. It seems to make a lot of sense to me. Now, over here, though, we see the Democrats, and you just kind of touch on that, and that was universal-based income. You know, people just getting a check just because. Talk just a little bit about that, Brian.
Well, we're seeing that. We're saying, okay, we've already done a live experiment of what happens if you just send people a check and they're not going to work. See all those empty shelves? You see all those long lines? You can't even get in the store or they, you know, check out. Everyone's social distancing at these snakes before they register. Yeah, if you don't want people to work, those are the kind of things you're going to get. You're going to get empty shelves, no production in the factories, no loading at the docks, no people at the checkout, et cetera, et cetera. So we've had a tutorial in universal basic income, and that is one very nice net positive of this crisis.
We need to make sure that we highlight that narrative as you've just explained that. Okay, opportunity. You know, we've been in difficult situations before, and America has prospered. I'd recommend not to bet against the American spirit. And you've just written this important piece in Forbes regarding that there's busts and recessions in bad times, and there's busts and booms in good times. Talk a little bit about opportunity, Brian Dimitrovic.
Yeah, there's this kind of argument out there, it's been made for ages, that recessions are necessary because that's when the business formation really occurs, when people are thrown out of work and capital isn't used, the entrepreneurs are able to reorganize it and to start new businesses during recessions, and it's the best time to start a new business. Okay, that has some truth to it, but I pointed out in that article that a lot of the greatest businesses in American history started during the middle of boom times. And one example I pointed out was Standard Oil. Rockefeller certainly started that business, which transformed the American economy in the middle of the Great Boom in the 1860s. Even Jeff Bezos started Amazon in the middle of, you know, well into the 1990s boom. So I think we have to be sure that we never think, like maybe we now have thought, that we have to have some kind of downturn, that if we have a continually expanding economy, it's going to get out of control, or there has to be a pause. There's no reason to think that. There are always wonderful opportunities in the context of economic growth. When we get back to economic growth again, there will be new wonderful things to do all the time. There won't be any real serious resource constraints, because what economic growth does is make us do better with what we already have. There'll be less resource constraints, fewer of those, because of economic growth. So I really would love to see us get back into you know, having a real indulgent economic growth again.
Okay, we're at, they say, what, around 30% unemployment, or we're going to get to that. But that's staggering, Brian. And when you hear those kinds of statistics, it's scary. What do you think the future holds for us?
Well, I think the natural course of the economy is just to, you know, boom back forward. This was a kind of everyone walking off the job or being told to walk off the job. I think if there's kind of normal, kind of sensible tax and regulatory policy, we can have a snapback. I mean, if we have tax rate cuts and everything, then employers are like, yeah, we want to hire. People should come right back. And we've already seen the ghost. We see what happens if nobody works. Then there's like nothing. And we don't like that. That's not the economy we approve of. There's public schooling has not done well in this crisis. You know, people have gone home and said, you know what, there are alternatives to education that are better than public schooling. So I think if there's going to be a casualty, it could be on that front to a degree. But I think in terms of business, the American people would love to get back to work.
Oh, most definitely. I think people want to get back to work. I mean, it's somewhat unbelievable that it looks like from some of these blue state governors that they're trying to not get their states going again, of course, all under this narrative of keeping people safe. But I think it's so interesting to see these different experiments between the different states, which is what the American idea was about, is that we'd have all these different experiments. And I think the veil is off on the experiments that work pretty well and those that don't, Brian.
Yeah, here's a question I have for those states apropos of that public school thing. So they're going to keep their states closed. Okay, nobody has any income. Are they going to cut their property taxes? Because all their school assessments will be due around August 1. And presumably their property values would have collapsed if nobody's working in the state. Are they going to adjust those property school tax rates downward? My assumption, based on the experience of the early 1930s, is they are going to do no such thing. And they're going to exacerbate the crisis in their states in a really unconscionable way. But such are the ways of big government.
Well, and so the veil is off. Another thing that we've talked about is regulation. And it looks like Donald Trump is continuing to roll back some of these regulations. And even here in Colorado, like with our restaurants and our bars, now you can have liquor stores deliver. People can actually take a to-go cup of alcohol, which one wonders, well, if you can now, why couldn't you before? You know, so I see a real positive that a bunch of these regulations are going to be rolled back.
Yeah, I think the regulatory front has been really productive. That's a very difficult problem to get a hold of. I think I've talked to you about this before. It's different from kind of taxes. Taxes have these headline rates, like the top personal income tax rate or the top corporate rate, and you can focus on that. You can get the public to focus on that. Look at that rate. It's at 70%, like it was in the 1970s. Bring it down. Take it to 50. Take it to 28. Regulation is so amorphous and so huge and detailed that there's not a kind of headline thing you can focus political attention on. And so that's why the forces of big government have kind of moved away from tax rates. You know, our tax rates used to be in the 90% range at the top. And they've moved into regulation because that's a much more difficult matter to focus political attention on that would seek to bring it down. And I think it's a great credit of the Trump administration that it has cut that knot to a degree and figured out how to kind of sweep out a lot of regulation for good.
So what do you see? I think that this COVID-19 Wuhan virus reaction disruption has now moved to being somewhat political. And what do you think about that, Brian?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not scientific anymore. Remember when we always heard, you know, just listen to the scientists, that we're way beyond that phase. So there's now a kind of presumption kind of going around scientifically that, well, if it's a disease, you want to make sure that a lot of people are out there getting immune to it as much as you want to do anything else. So we've moved past that kind of science phase into the pseudoscientific phase now. We're moving into the political and economic phase. I don't think the forces of big government have done well in this crisis. I think the electorate got to see what the forces of authoritarian big government are, and they didn't like it. And I don't think the Democratic Party was prepared for that. I thought they thought this crisis was kind of served up to them and it would benefit them. And I actually think it has really harmed the cause of the left wing in the United States.
Well, and as you mentioned, because people have gotten to kick the tires on what this really looks like, and we taken for granted that you'd go to the store and the shelves would be full, you had all kinds of choices, and now we're getting just a feel of what authoritarian government can do. And in Venezuela, we've heard of, you know, empty shelves, people going hungry there. And I don't think Americans like that. We like our choices and we like things, you know, we like prosperity. And so I'm hoping that people will really realize that. We've got just a minute left. Brian, what would be the final thought you'd like to leave with our listeners this morning?
Yeah, I think the American economy is starting to roar back right now. And I think the summer is going to see a lot of people out there doing things. And it probably is going to coincide with the moderation and the and inoculation, really, against the disease. And that would be kind of double whammy towards economic growth. And we could have a nice V-shaped recovery, as it's called. And if we do, we should always keep our mind on new business ideas and new business formation, because you can do that at all times, not just during a recession.
Right. And be sure and check out Brian Dmitrovic's piece at Forbes. Great piece. Brian, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Kim.
Okay. And our quote for today is Samuel Adams. He says, "The necessity of the times more than ever calls for our utmost circumspection, deliberation, fortitude, and perseverance." So today, my friends, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.
Young, like a new moon rising, fierce through the rain and lightning, wandering out into this great unknown. And I don't